You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
We wanted to hit Kerry like they were never hit before. And he goes, when we hit them, and then we go, oh, they don't like this. And then they went at them again. That's what Tyrone have to do.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, where the football chat flows like Jack Grealish's hair.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
And one of the lucky people who are going to be attending the game from an Irish point of view, and hopefully doing a whole lot more besides as well from an Irish perspective, is Dara O'Shea, who joins us on the line. And Dara is just two goals away from being the Championship's joint top scorer so far this season. Dara, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
This crack of being a goal-scoring centre-half, it is a nice new wrinkle, nice new addition you've had to your CV over the course of the last four games. It's a little bit unusual, I think, for yourself, given the goals ratio that you've had so far in your career, but I think you'll absolutely take it so far.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'll take whatever I can get, and obviously adding goals to my game is something that I've needed to do. And I mean, two have come in a short space of time now, but I'm hungry to get more.
West Brom have started the season so far pretty well. Valerian Ismail has come in there, obviously from Barnsley, come in with his own ideas of how to run things. You seem to be somebody who benefits from working alongside a former centre-half as manager. It happened with Slaven Bilic, obviously, with your breakthrough there to the first team, and now under Valerian Ismail. Give us a sense of what Valerian is like as a manager, because I think people might be somewhat familiar with his career. I know he had a brief spell at Crystal Palace, which people might remember, but beyond that, I think he really had an Indian summer at Lens and then at Bayern Munich. He's taken what he's learnt and put it into his coaching career, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a breath of fresh air since he's come in. He's a manager that we kind of needed after coming down from a tough season last. He's been great. He's been very intense. Brought a lot of fresh new ideas. It's front foot football that we're playing, and it's something that it's great for the fans to watch, but it's also great to play in too. And obviously, him being a former defender as well, it's excellent for me to have someone else who I can who I can pick their brains.
Has he been that kind of manager, that kind of one on one, giving everybody their own time? Has he put special emphasis on the likes of yourselves in defence to kind of pick your brains, or allow you to pick his brains as well, as regards what way he wants to play football?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there was a bit of both. He come in and he kind of said the way he wants to play, and listened to the way that the way that we wanted to play also. But he's very set in the way he wants to play. And I mean, it's really exciting for us. Like I said, front foot defending, and for me as a defender is music to my ears. I like playing the front foot. I like being aggressive, and he's brought that in throughout the whole team, and it's been positive since he's come in. And hopefully long may it continue.
Yeah, that air of positivity, I imagine, was probably needed, because it seemed like a long L schlep last year throughout the Premier League. Under, you know, first obviously under Slaven, and then with Sam coming in terms of trying to pick up the morale of the squad, which hasn't changed much, I don't think, over the course of the summer, but in terms of trying to pick up the morale of those players that did go down, how has it been kind of getting to grips again with the Championship?
Yeah, look, obviously last season didn't go the way we wanted to go as a group of players, and I think this season again it's just the same group, similar players there, and not much has changed. So I think we kind of had to take the positives from last season and kind of build on them. Look, we got promoted with a similar squad to the one we have now season before last, and I think we've got to use that to our advantage. And look, we've got great players here, and we know what the league is about. It's a tough league. Lots of games come. They come thick and fast. And I think you can't really look too far ahead in this league. And we've been kind of just taking each game as it comes. And I think that's the best way to look at it.
you seem to have, I'm not going to say exactly mirror, but you have very strong similarities with a side like, say, Norwich, who went up playing decent football. Things didn't work out for them immediately, but they have maintained the nucleus of that squad, both the one that went up initially, the one that played in the Premier League then, and then the one that had to regain promotion from the Championship. You find yourselves in a similar boat. I mean, you mentioned there the squad hasn't changed much from the one that gained promotion to the Championship, or from the Championship a couple of seasons ago. Having that experience ingrained in the squad is going to be absolutely massive.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Obviously, everyone's familiar with each other. There's no real big changes as such. The same characters are there. The changing room is still the same. So it kind of makes it that bit easier. Obviously, having worked with each other for the past few seasons as well, it just builds that unity that you need in the group. And obviously, with such a long season, it's vital that you have a good changing room, you have good lads around you, and everyone's pulling in the same direction.
People mention that, like, the nature of the season, and you mentioned there the game's coming thick and fast in the Championship. You've got 46 to get through before you can, you know, even countenance what's happening beyond that. Is it that much more noticeable, or especially, I guess, you would have noticed it more so last year when you're, you know, it's greatly reduced, you're playing every week, or you might be playing once every second week, but it is a case of you really don't have time to think in the Championship in terms of the next game coming down your way.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, last year is almost like a luxury, having one game a week sometimes, but the games come thick and fast in the Championship, and I think it's great as well, because I mean, if you win a game, you have to dust yourselves down. You can't get too high on that, and you've got another game coming in a couple of days' time. So it's tough. It's tough mentally, it's tough physically, but it's great, and that's really where the whole squad comes together. So you can't just have 11 players in the Championship. You need to have a full big squad, and everyone needs to play their part in it.
You kind of had a little bump in the road last night against Arsenal, but I realise it was a much changed side, and priorities are what they are, and the Carabao Cup might necessarily be on top of Valerian's hit list. But also the news, I guess, came last night that Callum Robinson, your teammate, had again tested positive for COVID-19. How's Callum? Do you know if he's like asymptomatic or symptomatic, or what his form is like? I'd imagine you two are pretty close, having gone away in Ireland duty together, coming over from West Bromwich.
Yeah, obviously we're very close, and he'd contracted it before as well, so I think he's okay at the moment. Obviously it's early doors since he's got it, but he's obviously going to be a huge miss for us and at the Ireland setup and for West Brom as well. He's a massive character to have around, and he's been in great form lately, scoring goals, and it's something that we will miss.
Yeah, absolutely. We heard Stephen talking about it earlier on, Stephen Kenny talking about the vaccination situation. Like, what's the talk like on the ground as regards squads? I'm not going to ask your own personal situation, that wouldn't be fair, but is there much talk among squads about vaccinations, the pluses, or people, what they might perceive as minuses of them, or is it everybody kind of keeping their head down as an individual thing? Do you hear from club doctors, etc., about these things?
Obviously, it's up to the individual whether or not they want to go ahead with it. But the offer is put there by the club. Everyone has the choice to go and get it. And obviously, there's pros there. The gaffer kind of had his emphasis on it with us at West Brom about getting it and having that vaccination, because it could come to us in good stead later on the season. But obviously, it's up to the personal choice. Obviously, each individual is different. Some people want it, some people don't. And I think that's just the way of the world.
Yeah, but is there like talk, like we were talking about it earlier on, in terms of if people have doubts, you'd imagine there will be, you know, football clubs have the ability to bring in doctors and to bring in people who might, you know, allay any fears that people might have about these things. Was that the situation with West Brom, or was it just the case that the manager had a word with you all and said what he'd prefer?
No, we've had club doctors in speaking to us, giving us the pros and cons of it and kind of putting people's questions at ease as such. I think a lot of people are quite unsure what's going on, and obviously to have the professionals come in and step in and kind of say their piece with it is good for the players.
Have you gotten used to operating within that kind of COVID-19 situation? Because most of the last year and a half of your career has been lived, like almost your entire Premier League existence was done in this kind of COVID bubble. Have you gotten perversely used to the situation there? I know things in England are a little bit different, but have you gotten used to the care that you have to take in terms of being a footballer around these things?
Yeah, I suppose most of my career, really, my professional career at West Brom has been under COVID, and it's been tough. Like you said, I have got used to it. It's become the normal now. Can't really go about things as freely as maybe I would have done before COVID, with the risks there. like I said, I have to look after myself if I want to keep playing, and I want to stay healthy and give myself the best chance. So I have to look after myself as best as possible. I have to weigh up the risks and make my choices from that.
Do you kind of have to really alter how you do things outside of football then, in terms of looking after yourself and being careful about where you go and how you spend your free time?
Yeah, definitely. I think you kind of just need to weigh up the risks with it. Obviously, there's negatives to stuff, and maybe I can't do some of the stuff that I'd like to do because the risks are there, and that's it. But I mean, I'm a professional footballer. I'm paid to play football, so I need to be at my best. I need to be fit, and kind of for myself as well, I want to be the best I could be. So missing time isn't really an option.
Yeah. Do you think that year last season in the Premier League has stood to you in terms of your own progress? I know things were not necessarily exactly how you'd want them to go, but that having that experience in your back pocket now and in your locker and knowing what top flight football is like, that's obviously got to be a massive boon to you going forward.
Yeah, I mean, that experience is going to be invaluable to me. Like, it's unbelievable the amount I learned from there. Obviously, it didn't go the way I would have liked to go or the way the team would have liked to go. But as a young kid, you grow up wanting to play in the Premier League, and I had a taste for that now, and it's pushed me on even more and made me even more determined to get myself back there and play at a high level. I mean, the players you're coming up against on a weekly basis is amazing, and I want to test myself against the best players. So it really just kind of whetted my appetite and showed me where I need to strive to get to and stay at.
Yeah, and you've been through a fair tranche of managers already, and I guess they're all different in their own individual way. And you know, Slaven had a really good relationship by all accounts with you when he was bringing you through to the first team, and he always spoke pretty highly of you.
Yeah, I mean, I owe a lot to Slaven. He gave me my debut. He kind of brought me into the first team step at West Brom and believed in me and had faith in me to play me. And I mean, since he put me in, things have gone on the up, and I mean, I've made my debut at Ireland, I've kicked on, I've done lots of things. So it was amazing for a manager to have trust in me at that age and belief in me and play me.
How did things differ under Sam Allardyce then?
Obviously the season was tough, results weren't going our way, and I suppose he's a different manager of sorts. Still a really good manager. He came in to do a job. Unfortunately, the job didn't get done, but as well, I learned a lot off him too, him being an ex-defender as well, and sort of an old school manager as such. I learned different things. Two different management styles is different. It's good for me to learn, and I think for me, learning all this at a young age, it's gonna put me in good stead for the future. Yeah.
He can be kind of painted as an old school, kind of an abrasive kind of figure. How was your personal relationship with Allardyce?
Yeah, I mean, I got on really well, to be honest. I think he liked me from the start as well. And I mean, I worked hard for him. I never really let him down either. Obviously, there was instances in the season where maybe I was taken off at early stages and stuff like that. But I mean, he spoke to me, he said there was nothing personal in them. It was more of a tactical change. So we had a good relationship.
Yeah, we've had bunch of texts in. Obviously, we mentioned that you were going to be on the show. There's a lot of people wanting to get in contact and get your different views on things. I guess chief amongst people's views and what they're looking forward to is next week. And a texter asking, is Darragh looking forward to getting touch tight with Cristiano Ronaldo next week? He'll need to get working on his vertical jump. That's got to be a dream come true stuff to be marking, or possibly man marking someone like Cristiano Ronaldo, but you also have the reality of it being a job to do and a World Cup qualification campaign that the Republic of Ireland really need to start salvaging starting from next Wednesday.
Yeah, definitely. It's another opportunity to get points on the board and go out and play for your country. So it's massive. I think first and foremost, there is a job to be done, and that's Portugal there in our way. And I mean, you can look at their squad and you can name their players, and yeah, it probably will be a dream to play against some of them players or line out beside them. But I mean, that's what you want as a player. You want to test yourself against the best players. And I think as a nation, we want to play against these teams. We want to see where we are. We've got great quality. Maybe results haven't gone our way in previous games in the campaign, but I think it was a work in progress, kind of. There's players coming through. The gaffer was implementing his ideas, and the last camp in Spain really helped us out as a group, got us more together, more united, and I think everyone's really looking forward to it.
Yeah, the summer seemed to put a real a kind of a more positive spin on things as regards the Andorra results, and then as the summer went on and as the Euros went on, that draw with Hungary looked better and better, and that kind of proved that the side can absolutely dig in when results are necessary, and that might necessarily be what you have to do next Wednesday. How has morale been? Because you'd probably be aware that there's been a bit of negativity around results, but how has the actual insular camp been like?
Yeah, inside the camp's amazing. I haven't really been involved with a team that's been as together as that, especially that camp in Spain. It was great to get all the lads together, kind of for the different age groups as well, and kind of people maybe becoming friends and getting closer to lads that they wouldn't have been in the past. And obviously it was great to have that time on the grass as well with the gaffer to kind of give us a bit of breathing space and actually focus on things that we want to, rather than preparing for the next game as such. But like I said, yeah, we're all just really looking forward to it. Obviously, the Hungary game was nice. We thought we put in a good performance and played well against a good Hungary side that went on to do well in the Euros.
Yeah. As regards yourself, like, we've seen kind of Stephen, you know, vacillate between different systems. There's been back threes, there's been back fours. Which one do you kind of feel more comfortable in, or is it much of a muchness for yourself?
Yeah, I feel comfortable in whatever formation. I think at this stage I've played across all positions, to be honest, and whatever formation the gaffer plays, I'm happy to play that. I trust his judgment to pick the right formation and the right team. So I think, he's got a wealth of knowledge. The two formations have been good. He's implemented his ways. They may be different than would have played in under previous managers as well, so it's been good.
Has Anthony Barry made much of a difference on how things are set up?
Yeah, Anthony's obviously come in. He's been great, fresh as well, fresh ideas, bringing little things in that maybe weren't there before. He's a great coach, obviously, and he's a good guy too. So it's nice having that energy around the camp.
Is there a kind of an overall aim for these next three matches? Is there, like, you often hear people saying that they'd be delighted to get maybe 7 points out of nine or whatever. What's the actual goal for this squad heading into those trio games next week?
I think the goal is to win every game. You'd be lying if you said you weren't going out to win a game. I think we have to look at it from a clean slate, really. We have to look at each team differently. Obviously, the first game is the most important game because it's our next game, and that's where the emphasis will go into. See how we get on in there. We're going to put a good account for ourselves, and we're going to hopefully do the country proud and come out with a good performance and hopefully 3 points. And I think then we can look towards the next game and take it from there.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Dara, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it, taking time out to speak to us this evening, and best of luck with the rest of the season with West Brom.
Cheers, thank you.
There you go, it's Dara O'Shea, the West Brom and Ireland defender. It is Shamrock Rovers 0, Flora Tallinn 1. 11 minutes to go in Tala Stadium. Rovers still needing 3 goals just to force extra time. Tom Kundert will be giving us a special view on Portugal up after the break. And don't forget, Football on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, where the football chat flows like Jack Grealish's hair. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now, this time next week, we will be digesting the results of Ireland's latest World Cup qualifier, which takes place in Faro. They're going up against Portugal and their star-studded squad. But joining us on the line to look ahead to that game and to a little bit of other news involving somebody Portuguese is Tom Kundert, who is the Portugal correspondent for World Soccer Magazine. Tommy, very welcome to the show. Our initial intention was to merely preview this small matter of a World Cup qualifier, maybe the breaking of a world record in terms of goals scored in international football. But the man who is potentially breaking that world record, it looks like he's going to have a new club between now and kickoff in Faro in 6 days' time. Cristiano Ronaldo appears to be on his way out of Juventus.
Yeah, well, let's wait and see. It could happen, couldn't it? I'm always a little bit wary of, jumping the gun on these transfers. But it's certainly lots seems to be gathering, doesn't it? The rumours suggesting that will happen. And, if he does end up at Manchester City, that will certainly make things interesting.
Yeah, absolutely it would. There appears to be a sense that Juventus will be quite happy to have him off the wage bill, that he might have come towards the end of their road, at least, because they want to look at a more sustainable model in terms of wages and in terms of profiles of player, let's just say, put it that way. To head to Manchester City seems like an interesting move. Paris Saint-Germain have distanced themselves a little bit this evening from potentially making a move for Ronaldo. But you'd have to say they would be tempted given the lay of the land, and especially the Champions League draw that we've just had this evening as well, where both clubs have been pitted against one another.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? I was just waiting for Milan to be put in that group as well. Just yeah. An absolutely incredible group. But you know, it's, well, you know, everybody, of course, talking about PSG. I'm really interested to see how they do because, you know, Messi, Mbappe and Neymar, you know, obviously three of the most amazing players in the world. But, you know, none of them really like to defend that much. Mm. And you can normally get away with one or two of those players on a team, I'd say two maximum. Three, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. If Ronaldo went there again, I mean, you know, in terms of the team structure, it would be amazing to watch. But, you know, I'm not sure how they'd make that work. But, of course, I suppose you can ask the same kind of questions at Manchester City if Ronaldo does go there, because we all know that Pep Guardiola's sides are all about, you know, pressing and, you know, just high energy basically all over the pitch, including the centre forwards or whoever's up top. And that doesn't really fit Ronaldo's game, does it, nowadays? So, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting to see if he does end up at Manchester City, you know, how Pep will kind of fit him into his team.
Does that transfer talk around somebody like Ronaldo, like, would that be the kind of thing that would affect him in terms of going into next week's fixture in Farrell? Or is he just this kind of, he's so driven that any kind of outward distraction, even if it is the upheaval of moving from Italy to England Italy to France, that he can just put it out of his mind and play the next 90 minutes that's in front of him?
Yeah, no, I don't think it would affect him one iota. I think that's the secret of Ronaldo's success, really, his mentality. He just, you know, it doesn't really matter what's going on. You know, he's really somebody who's, you know, naturally attracts controversy, isn't it? A lot of it, not even off his own making. And, you know, anything that Ronaldo does is a little bit like royalty, isn't it? Yeah, it just gets front page news, splashed over the front page of the front page or the back pages or both sometimes. And he just doesn't, it doesn't really seem to affect his performances at all. Also, if he has a very bad match, which doesn't happen very often, but if he does, it just doesn't affect him at all. The next match, you know, he can bang in a hat-trick, so I don't really think whatever happens between now and then, I don't think it will affect Ronaldo at all in terms of this, you know, the next Portugal game.
Yeah, Tom, you're filling us with confidence here as regards what's going to await Ireland in Faro next week, because as you may or may not be aware, our results haven't been too hot over the last couple of years. And I guess when Euro 2020 ended, or at least Portugal's Euro 2020 ended, we saw Cristiano Ronaldo equaling Ali Daei's all-time international goal-scoring record, and everybody thought, oh, no, fair enough, he's going to go and break it eventually. We then looked at the calendar and realised that Ireland was the next fixture and the next target for Cristiano Ronaldo, and we could well be a footnote in terms of a world record being set in Faro. What is the Portuguese view of Ireland heading into this fixture? We've gotten the usual platitudes today from Fernando Santos of their, you know, pretty workmanlike, and they know like how to dig in, and they're almost like an English side. We're kind of used to that kind of stuff. Would Portugal be looking to brush Ireland aside in 6 days' time, or are they taking us a little bit more seriously?
Oh, definitely taking Ireland seriously. And I think if I kind of made you wary about that little intro about Ronaldo, I think you only had to look at Euros, you know, the recent European Championship to see that Portugal themselves aren't really in an ideal place at the moment. And they do tend to struggle against teams like Ireland with, you know, with all due respect, perhaps not the star names in their team, but teams who are, you know, basically quite physical, very hardworking. And I suppose you can say a bit more of that old traditional British style. I think that's the kind of style which does tend to disrupt Portuguese sides or the Portuguese national side. And like I said, if you look at Portugal, you know, they've got this amazing array of talents. They've got players like, you know, Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva, Ronaldo, of course. Unfortunately, João Félix is injured, but, you know, you've got Diogo Jota. It's just top players playing in top clubs, really, all around the world. But for Portugal, it really hasn't come together at all. Fernando Santos hasn't managed to find the right chemistry, hasn't been able to kind of harness that amazing talent, especially from the attacking point of view. So, I wouldn't, you know, if I was Ireland coming into this match, you know, I'd certainly think that, you know, they've got a chance of disrupting Portugal, making things difficult for Portugal. And also, if Portugal don't start well, you know, I wouldn't, this is the first game with, it will be with Portugal playing in front of their own fans, of course, for a long time. And the Euro didn't really go down very well at all here. So I wouldn't be surprised seeing the crowd getting a bit restless and getting a bit edgy if Ireland can hold Portugal at bay for, you know, perhaps the first half or longer.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about Fernando Santos. It's an interesting one because obviously you buy a lot of credit when you win a European Championships, especially when you're an underdog as they were in 2016 in France. There was a sense going into this tournament in the summer that Portugal had one of the better squads at the Euros and that they could really do some damage. There was that wobble against Germany. I think a lot of people said, listen, it was an off night. And then we've seen, you put it into context of what's gone on this year so far. You add in that defeat to Belgium, which, you know, Portugal were very much, I think, the second best side. I think most people would agree to that. And they haven't pulled up any trees either in this World Cup qualifying campaign. I mean, yes, they're unbeaten so far, but it was just a 1-0 victory at home to Azerbaijan. As you mentioned, teams can make it difficult for them. Serbia held them to a 2-2 draw, which is the exact same result as we almost got over there. And then you Portugal, who took the lead against them. Now, we fell to a defeat to Portugal when they took the lead. But those are the kind of things that put pressure on a manager when you've got that array of talent and people are wondering why you aren't having Bruno Fernandes play the way he is for Manchester United versus how he could play for Portugal. Like, what has been the reaction to Santos? Is he kind of on borrowed time? Is there a willingness to let this play out as far as he's concerned? Or is it somewhere in between?
Yeah, I'd say it's somewhere in between because you're right. You know, Portugal have never, ever won a major tournament. And they, and of course, won Euro 2016, then they won the inaugural Nations League straight after. So that did get Fernando Santos an enormous amount of credit. You know, he's a national hero. I think even if he gets... if he does lose his job in the next year or two, he would always be remembered as a hero just for what he achieved. But having said that, you're absolutely right when you point out those talents. Everyone agreed here in Portugal that this squad going into this European Championship was far stronger than the Portugal squad, which actually won it in 2016. So expectations were really high. And really, in none of the matches, Portugal really hit top gear, you know, take away maybe the last 5 or 10 minutes against Hungary. And so, even against Belgium, it's interesting there, that's the way you read the game against Belgium, because I think I'd agree with that, although a lot of people here said it was Portugal's best performance. You know, they were attacking the whole time, but I think that's more to do with game context. You know, they went a goal down, so they really had no option but to pull forward. But even so, they didn't really create enough chances. There just seems to be a real lack of cohesiveness. And Fernando Santos is naturally a very conservative coach. He showed that throughout his career, even in club management, and then at Greece, where I suppose you can say it's more understandable with, you know, less talented players maybe, or not such an abundance of talented players to work with. But people just say his management style doesn't suit the talent which he has available. And so, it's getting louder and louder, I'd say, the calls for the FBF to make a change. It's going to be, you know, it is definitely going to be, that's one thing I was saying, if I was in the Irish camp, you know, that's something you've got to try and play on, I think, just try and keep Portugal at bay for the first, 20 minutes or first half, if possible. And I think they really could start getting nervous and, maybe a bit disorganised, and maybe Ireland can take advantage of that, because at the moment, Portugal have really been playing like a bunch of very talented individuals thrown together without much of a plan.
Yeah.
And, sometimes it works because, Bernardo Silva produces an amazing through ball, or Cristiano Ronaldo scores an amazing goal. But really, it hasn't really convinced many people more. I'd say Fernando Santos's supporters are getting less and less day by day.
This is going to sound like a perverse question, because clearly he's still one of the best players in the world, but would that Portugal team, and I mean like team with a capital T, would that be better without a Cristiano Ronaldo as the main focal point, and you could then have people like Ruben Neves, who have a little bit more room to breathe. Bernardo Silva has a little bit more room to breathe and doesn't necessarily have to feed the beast as Ronaldo has been, and deservedly so for the last 15 years. But essentially, that era is ending. And, you know, it didn't work particularly well in the Euros. So there is a sense that they are going to have to move on and find another way of playing and find another way of scoring goals. Is it almost a sense that they would be a better team without him, and they would flow better without him?
Yeah, it's a question which is being asked in Portugal, I'd say increasingly, especially because on the few occasions that Ronaldo hasn't played, Portugal have actually tended to play better, you know, as a team or more cohesively. But of course, you know, Ronaldo remains Ronaldo, the greatest Portuguese player of all time. And, you know, just breaking records galore for his club side and for the national side as well. And he loves playing for Portugal, and, you know, he's the captain and the figurehead. So it really is going to be interesting and really quite a difficult conundrum, I think, for Fernando Santos, for the Portuguese setup, and even for Ronaldo himself. You know, he doesn't really want to ruin his legacy. I think it'd be impossible to ruin his legacy, but maybe tarnish his legacy by, you know, kind of becoming a hindrance to Portugal. I'd say we weren't at that stage yet, but, you know, he's 36 now, and that there will come a time when that, when, you know, when that inevitably happens, when Portugal, to be a stronger team from the start, should start without him. I think maybe, I'm not sure if Ronaldo is ready to do this at the moment, but I think perhaps in the future, one thing we could see is Ronaldo remaining in the Portugal team, but maybe not starting. You know, imagine Ronaldo coming on for the last 30 minutes against the Tyrone defence. I think that might work quite well. Hmm. But you know, saying all that, Ronaldo was top scorer in Italy last year, wasn't he? And so you can't really say his, you know, his powers are that diminished at the moment. And basically, it's a bit of a, while Fernando Santos is the coach of Portugal, I think it's a bit of a non-question because, you know, he's asked this time and time again, and he just always insists, you know, Ronaldo, first name on the team sheet. They've got a really good relationship, those two. And so I don't think that will happen unless, you know, Ronaldo will not be anything but an automatic starter for the foreseeable future, at least.
Is the Portuguese expectation that they win this group?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think they'd be very disappointed with anything other than winning this group. They had a bit of a setback against Serbia, of course, the last game. I don't know if you recall, Ronaldo scored a legitimate goal right at the death, but there was no VAR, and the ball had clearly crossed the line, but it was ruled out. And so, you know, Portugal are very aggrieved at that. But yeah, you know, just again, looking at the players, this is why I suppose Fernando Santos, a little bit of a victim of his own success, because Portugal have had so much success in the last, you know, 5 years internationally in their national team. And then since then, club players, a whole series of club players have really gone on to shine at some of the biggest clubs in Europe, in the world. And so people kind of automatically feel that this success should be continued, or maybe, you know, we should even expect more out of the Portugal side in terms of, you know, how they've been playing. And so, yeah, anything other than top spot will definitely be seen as a, you know, as a very, as a big disappointment in this World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, we're used to Porto and Lisbon being the two big hubs, I guess, of football in Portugal. And that's borne out by the Champions League draw again today, when all three are dotted throughout the groups. But what is the Estádio Algarve like in terms of a venue and in terms of its supporters? Because the Algarve, as we know, is a different kettle of fish entirely in terms of its attitude and its outlook. What kind of place, what kind of stadium, what kind of atmosphere can the Irish players expect next week?
Yeah, it's a lovely stadium. It's a really nice stadium. I don't know if they're, I don't know what the situation is actually on travelling fans. I don't know if there will be any travelling fans.
But it's just in terms of what awaits in terms of the differences of the supporters.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit, unfortunately, it's a bit of a white elephant because it was built for Euro 2004, of course, that Portugal hosted. But it doesn't actually have a club side which plays there regularly. Occasionally, there's a few sides in the Algarve, like Faro, a smaller side called Lolense, and a few other, and I think even Olhanense, another Algarve side, have occasionally used it. But it's not their home pitch, and so it's used really just for a few showpiece matches per season. There's usually the exactly this the August or the September international is held there. Portugal play there. Also, the Super Cup has been held there. You know, the season curtain raising, curtain raise has been held there a few times. It has actually hosted a few other international matches. I think Gibraltar were playing their home matches there for a while. But yeah, it's a nice stadium. It's really nice. It's architecturally, it's quite a stunning stadium, really. It's built in the, it's supposed to resemble the sails of a ship. And it's a little bit out of town, out of Faro. It's about 10 kilometres outside Faro, not exactly on the coast. So yeah, it's a little bit in the middle of nowhere. But and it's quite an open stadium. But of course, the usually the like I said, there's no home supporters there, so it's usually a bit of a festive occasion because of course
they're just delighted that everybody's in town essentially.
Also it's because it's held in summer. A lot of people who are on holiday.
Yeah.
End up going to the stadium. You see quite a lot of families there and everything. So I wouldn't really say it's a hotbed of football.
Right.
But yeah, it should be. Should be a nice atmosphere there.
Good stuff. And I'd imagine there will be one or two Irish holidaymakers who might well have found their way upon tickets before kickoff next Wednesday. Tom Cronder, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a preview of what we can look forward to in Faro next week. There you go. Tom Cronder, the Portugal correspondent for World Soccer.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, where the football chat flows like Jack Grealish's hair.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.